change, isn't it nice? And to this advisors group meeting, we're going to jump right in and start where we left off. We had brainstormed a whole bunch of ground rules that we're going to work on. I'm going to facilitate the meeting. I'm going to ask that people put their hands up just so that we can get everybody heard. And then Lyle will take that, and then we'll agree on how we can make this a really productive meeting. Everybody wants to be heard. Everybody wants to be understood. You know, it's really important. We value your input. So to do that most effectively, we need to make it a really fair and equitable way of doing it.
I was supposed to tell Bart that Andy was going to call in about 20 minutes. So it'll come through. So he's delivering right now.
Hello, everybody on the phone as well.
I think it'll be Andy.
I think Francis is Jack.
Jack.
Anyway, one of the things that we will go... Barb will put it up on the...
Sure.
On the screen here, and we'll go through some of the things we brainstormed. And so I'm kind of new at this, so bear with me. I have been a teacher, though, so I know a thing or two about teaching. But so let's get this zoomed through this as much as we can, and then we can get on with some meat to our meetings. So, one of the things that we talked about while she's getting that up and going, and I can get started, is just refresh your minds. We talked about having people just talking about just 2 or 3 minutes as a maximum. Lyle will keep track. What do you guys think about that? Does that sound good? Two, three minutes. I hear 3 minutes.
Yep.
3 minutes. Great. 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Yeah, 3 minutes. And I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
That's fine. He'll be here. Yeah.
3 minutes?
He'll be here for it.
Yep. Okay. So I think let's agree then, 3 minutes. That's already one we're out of the way. We're zooming through this. The next thing we talked about was, and Bob will bring it up, you'll be able to see it, is we talked about things that we get off the track on, parking those for an agenda item later so that we don't get off the track and don't get our agenda discussed. So do we agree? To that end, what I will do is say topic. And that'll mean that you're off the topic, cut it short, or get back onto the topic, and we'll make a note. Barb's really good at stuff like that. We'll make a note and make that topic that you're off in the weeds on an agenda item for something else. Or we can discuss it later. Whatever we come up with. How does that sound? Sound good? Awesome. Anybody disagree? Okay, just let me know. So, sticking to the agenda was the next item we've got here. To me, that's kind of the same. Sticking to the agenda is, and when you get off the topic, we'll just say topic, and then that'll get you back on topic. Otherwise, you'll run out of your 3 minutes without being able to say what you wanted to say.
So, item two, is it park topics in the weeds or park topics that are in the weeds?
Park topics that are in the weeds. As we get off topic, we'll just say, hey, topic.
That's you know. Your clarification.
Yeah. Does that sound good? Okay. Anybody have any problems with those? We are just...
I just want to give a little bit more background here real quick. We really, as the agency, want to turn a new page with this advisory group. We've had some tough meetings. We've had some, issues within the meetings, and we really want to start fresh on a new path forward in terms of how we interact and how these meetings are run. As Jenny mentioned earlier, it's really important to us that these meetings are productive, and it's also important to us that you guys are heard and that you have, we've heard some comments about not being able to put items up on the agenda and having some input into what we're talking about. So what we're trying to do here is really just establish a little bit of order for how we're going to run things, and also talk about how we'll deal with that in terms of the agenda, how you guys will bring topics forth for the agenda, and how we'll decide these meetings are run moving together as a group. Now, I don't want you to think that these ground rules are just meant because we're trying to get folks in, but that's not the point. We're not trying to just get folks into line. What we're trying to do is put together a process where everybody feels inclusive, that we're all a part of the group. This isn't just me leading the group anymore. I'm just a member, just like everyone else. We brought Jenny in to help facilitate that. And so we really want to just kind of outline what this looks like moving forward. How do we develop the agenda? What are the kind of rules, for lack of a better term, and how we'll conduct these meetings and how they'll be run moving forward in order to get to what everybody wants, right? We all want to be heard. We all want to have an opportunity to have our viewpoints expressed. And we also need to get some work done. We need to work together in order to get some work done. We know we've got significant challenges and issues here, and we're really committed to using this advisory group in a way to help us solve problems moving forward. So I just wanted to kind of provide that little clarity there in terms of what we're trying to get accomplished. So thank you, Jim.
And to that end, I just want to say that the rules that we're adopting here, the ground rules, are also for the public when they have that session. So what we agree on here will also be abided by in the public. So they have to stay on topic, you know, and whatever. Yes?
You might explain that in case people don't recognize the difference between the SOGL
and the right.
You know what?
But explain it.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah.
Between the what? Good point. So, excuse me. When we have, and I see there are some new faces here tonight, so this is an advisory meeting of the Will of the Bay Salmon Advisory Group. These meetings are open to the public, and we will provide some time at the end of the agenda for the public to be able to comment on some of the topics that we discuss here tonight. But we won't do that till the end. The first hour and 45 minutes will really be discussion between the advisory group, and at the end of the meeting, we will provide some opportunity from you folks in the public who want to come up and speak, an opportunity to do so. But please keep in mind that these ground rules that we're working on tonight and the process that we're trying to put in place will apply to you members of the public as well as us as advisors. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. That was close.
All right, so moving on, we've got our, we're talking about, gone from, we agreed that topics that are off the agenda will be parked, we'll make a note, and we can discuss them at a future time if we think we need to, okay? And then the next one is developing the agenda. Now, I'm going to have to need some help with this one. Voting for extra topics by number of topics.
Yeah. So at our September 10th meeting, when we kind of brainstormed some of these ideas in terms of how we'll run the meetings going forward, we talked about how we might get advisor-submitted topics onto the agenda. We talked a little bit about voting for that. I tried to do that the first time. That is very cumbersome. That's not going to work for me. I would propose that maybe if this is how we want to proceed, that maybe we utilize the last 10 minutes of the meeting to kind of decide on what topics will be included in the next agenda. One thing I don't want to do is come here and say, okay, we're going to use the first 10 meetings to decide on the agenda, and then if something is on there that I didn't anticipate, we're not prepared to talk about that. But at the same time, I really don't have a whole lot of time to go through 50 emails and combine all that stuff and put together a doodle pool and take the vote. So my personal thoughts are maybe the best way to do that is at the end of every meeting, before we get to public comment, we take 10 minutes to kind of go over, okay, here's some of the things that the agency would like to get done. And then within that, we would discuss, okay, how much time do we think will be needed for the discussion around that? And we'll put that on the agenda. And then And then if that's something that we need to take feedback, that I need to get some feedback from the advisory group in order to take to Olympia or to present to the Fish and Wildlife Commission, then we have we'll do like a 20 minutes to discuss the topic, and then we'll go 5 minutes once we get to the feedback session where I just go around, or Jenny will go around, and everybody will have their 3 minutes to provide that feedback. So that's what I would put forth in the group is a way we could move forward and try and have some certainty in the agenda for us to be able to prepare topics and be able to get some of these topics that the advisors think are important on the agenda for the next meeting. So those are my thoughts.
What do you think? Sound good? Any thoughts on that?
Huh? Well, we need to have the report with everybody else and respect for everybody else, and we each get a chance to speak and hear our views. So, but we have to have an agenda we need to follow, too.
Right.
And I don't understand why we are still in the weeds on this. We've already had a meeting on the 10th, and it's pretty well decided. So why are we rehashing the whole thing over again?
I think the point on it was just brainstormed at that point, and I don't think it was agreed upon, but correct me if I'm wrong on that one.
Well, I mean, I think there was still some consternation about what the ground rules were and what we were trying to do. So there are a few topics that I'd like to put forth for the agenda tonight, one of those being Chinook egg ticks and what we have. Barb is prepared with some materials for us to look at, and we can have a discussion about that. But really, we wanted to get these things set in terms of how this group is going to work, what sort of processes we're going to use moving forward before we get to that, so then we have some certainty, you know, moving forward about how this is going to run.
Just go right around.
Yep. I
don't care for it at all, because I feel like I'm here to... We're here to discuss the review of the Fish Commission policy. That's what I feel like we're here for. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't feel like we're here to discuss how much water flow we've got out of some creek somewhere. I mean, my problem with this is we as a group are supposed to be coming up with ideas about policy. As I understand it, where the policy's failed, where the policy is working, whether, you know, and I feel like that's our problem when we do this. I want an agenda item. We all have an agenda item that we want to put on there. And that's when you talked earlier about us having a civil meeting. As long as everybody gets exactly what they want, we'll have a civil meeting. But as long as people don't get exactly what they want, which has been our problem for 12 years, we don't have a civil meeting. So when you start putting out, put whatever you want on the agenda, and my item gets on there and it doesn't go the way I want, our civil meeting, I just feel like we're getting clustered again instead of saying, I felt like in August this meeting was supposed to be about hatchery review. At one point we put down at this meeting, it's morphed into it, now we're going to talk about how our meetings are going to run. Are we not supposed to have this done by January or February?
So, I can... sorry.
I've seen where we've changed that.
So, yeah.
We've postponed that to another time. That's frustrating for me, I guess, Chad. It's probably frustrating for everybody. But I feel like we're not getting to this, and now we're going to add another sector to this of what I want to talk about or what Tim wants to talk about. That was the discussion of our last meeting, was we got to stop doing this and wasting all this time. We need to just, bam, here's the agenda. This is what we're talking about tonight. We're giving whoever it is that's going to stand up and give their stuff. We're going to talk about it. We're going to air how we feel about it in 3 minutes. Moving on.
Okay, I think what I'm hearing you saying is that the agenda topic for you is not an issue, because the agenda is the policy that you're meant to be discussing. Is that correct? I don't know the eggs and bones of this. I just am trying to reword it.
He or all of you are trying to do a review of a policy.
Okay.
He ought to know what agenda issues we're talking about. Not what all of us come up with. We're here to speak on the agenda issue that he comes up with.
Right.
And that's how I feel. If we don't keep it a little bit compressed, we're going to waste the whole meeting again.
Yeah. No, I understand that viewpoint. The reason we're doing this, Lance, is because we can't get that done. And at the same time, you're exactly right. Some of these meetings are supposed to be about the comprehensive review, but that's not everything that the advisory group is supposed to do moving forward, right?
I understand.
So that's a piece of it, but what we're trying to do is set a process for a long-term vision, just not even outside of the comprehensive review, how we'll operate for the next 5 years, 10 years. And I'm not saying that everybody's going to submit an agenda item and that's absolutely going to be on the agenda. What I'm saying is you have the opportunity to submit them, and then the group will figure it out.
I agree with what you're saying.
But I think we got to have some ways in which we, some certainty in how we're going to operate before we can even get there. We haven't been able to get there because we don't, in my opinion, because we don't have these ways. We don't have this set in terms of how this will run and how we'll function as a group.
So what I hear is, and your next one is okay. What I hear is, in the event that you don't get what you want, we still need to learn to be civil so we can get some product, I guess, is what we're trying to achieve here, right? Melissa?
I have to agree with Bob and Lance that going over this again, we wasted two meetings on this, and, you know, yes, we needed to address it briefly, but we're all here to discuss the policy and the critical issues that the Willapa Bay salmon are facing right now. And it is 6:17, and we haven't made it to number 5.
Okay.
So we need to dish this and get on with what we need to do.
So, yes, Chris? Okay.
I have two comments. One, I have run hundreds of meetings in my life. I've had training, I've given training on how to run meetings to my people. And I agree with the no leaving thing. But there's a problem. And all the training and everything I've had is that you need a 5-minute break every hour, and everybody needs to know it. And then most of us maybe can make it. Okay. But it's just not humanly possible to sit here on this chair for 2 hours. It's not going to happen. And so people will drift in and out, and there you go. And so I think to professionally run a meeting, you need to have a schedule for a break, and everybody come back, boom, get back to work. The other thing is that we haven't covered all the reasons why we haven't covered the agenda in a year, covered the policy in a year we were supposed to. But it's just not because of, you know, the need for more better behavior in the meetings. It's because we've done everything else, like these gentlemen said. I think we need a ground rule that says that we will not, we have 4 H's in our policy. We need a ground rule that says we will not routinely exclude any of those H's from our policy discussion.
Okay. All right, we've got that. You're up.
I'm going to go to number 6. Respect the public by not leaving and showing respect to each other. I think offense is that. Okay?
Okay, well, why would you?
Well, because when you apply it, that is directed at me. Okay? And I'm going to tell you that I've been in all levels of meetings all over the place, hundreds of them, and I've never seen participants nailed in the audience, nailed down to a chair. You don't do that in the legislature. You don't do that in Congress. And so what I have a problem with is implying that when I walked out the door because I was so frustrated that I could not participate in a polite fashion, you've now interpreted that to be me being impolite. It's the exact opposite. I was being polite to the public. Okay? The exact opposite. So I don't have a problem with you putting up a rule and saying, okay, I'm back in the third grade, I've got to raise my hand if I go to the bathroom. Okay? And if someone says something in front of the room, I guess we either do the that means that I don't agree. Okay, or we do the old Purdue basketball orbit routine. Okay, but this is why we ran into this problem, was a frustration, and this is all being portrayed as if this whole problem was our problem. It was our problem around the campfire. It was not. It was not. The leadership of this meeting is standing in the front of the room and lost control of it time after time after time, and often created the problem. So I really find that offensive, that the portrayal here is there's something wrong with the public. I really have a problem with that.
I hear what you're saying.
Tim, I hear what you're saying. Number six is not pointed at you in any way. Actually, what that is about is we have that 15 minutes at the end for the public to come up and comment, and a lot of times the rest of the room doesn't take that opportunity to listen to what they have to say. There's been some other side conversations. There's been people who've got up and walked out at that point in time. And we, as the agency, thinks it's important that the advisory group hears what the public has to say, and that they've sat and quietly listened to us have our discussions for an hour and 45 minutes, and now they have their 15 minutes to have their say. We should just show them that same respect. That is 100% what that is about. It's not pointed at anyone, period. And folks, we're not doing this. I'm not going anywhere saying we're not getting things done, because what we're trying to do is put together something so we all know what's expected, so we all have some say in the process, and so we can put together a process for how these meetings will be run and what we'll do moving forward over the next 5 years, over the next 10 years. And I don't think we've had a real solid vision about that. So this, I see, is the first step in turning that new page and deciding as a group, how do we want to run our meetings? How do we want these things to operate and move forward? So that's...
Okay. Do you have any thoughts about how we do our agenda? Was what the original question was?
Do I have any thoughts about how we can do
that? Yeah, I do.
I'm not sure right now of the appropriate time to express those opinions, maybe it is, because I tell you what, when I read the email that came out from the department, there was an agenda item that was suggested. Mm-hmm. You already mentioned it, about 8K.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that item was sent out via email prior to me seeing that several weeks ago, asking for an opinion on that. My opinions are irrelevant, really. But here's the deal. What I read today, that came from the Fish Committee. So what that tells me is that becomes an item of interest, that the agenda is actually being set per the policy, okay, in some ways, and that the focus of those topics, if the Fish Committee is going to either directly or indirectly suggest agenda items because of their importance to them to making a decision on this policy, that in fact, the topics that are brought up, the agenda items, should be, as far as I'm concerned, predetermined in terms of their importance and what the Fish and Wildlife Commission is going to do or going to suggest about this policy. So, all of this other stuff, 4-H's, no 4-H's, makes no difference, really. What makes a difference is how are we going to raise and harvest fish in Mullapa Bay in a system that has no federal issues, no tribal issues. Why aren't we focusing on how to build a better fishery? I made a phone call today to a fisherman that fishes down here. He knows quite a bit about this project. 862 fish, I think, was in the last blip that came out from the department, from Monsanto. That's the number of fish that were accessed, I believe, by the saltwater anglers in Willapa Bay. I understand that. You asked me the question about what do I think of these topics. I'm answering your question. So, it's a gentleman. What are we going to do?
I'm sorry. We'll get back to it. Okay.
You asked me the question about this policy, and I told you I shouldn't say anything. But now that I'm saying it,
is that yours or mine?
I'm sorry.
I've sat quietly for years here.
When we
listen to this dysfunction.
The next one.
And I'm tired.
Mom, would you
we need to make a decision on the policy.
Can you please, we'll get back to you in just a minute. Okay.
So to answer to your question, would like to see the majority of my time here spent providing input on review and policy. That's all. So I really like the round robin. I think it gives opportunity for me to hear everybody with sort of equal amounts of time. And I really appreciate the agenda topics in advance. Gives me some time to prepare, think, and research into whatever I need to learn.
Thanks.
That's great. So I hear that people want to move on with this, so I'm just going to really quickly just go through these super fast, and if anybody does not agree, we'll discuss that. Really, someone here raised the, and these are all things that have been raised by you, not us. It was raised by the group. So no interrupting, that's pretty important. Everybody likes to be heard, and so I suggest that you adopt that. However, if I think that you're off topic, sometimes I don't know what you guys are discussing, so I'll check with Chad or one of the others and say, hey, topic, that's a clue, you know, get back onto the topic. And then if the other thing that's really important about interrupting is it's really not a fair thing. No one likes to be interrupted. So if that happens, I'll just say, hey, you know, please stop right then. Let the person finish, you know, and we might have an oops, and after that, well, it's not really a productive meeting. If you raise your hand, then that's not interrupting, except we're in here. Okay. And then quickly, respecting each other, and as part of what, we've got very polar opposite views here, and part of the advisory group handbook talks about getting along even though you've got really different views. So that's the trick here is learning to get along with that. And that's one of the reasons why we have these here. So respecting each other, respecting the views, no character assassinations or all that kind of stuff, because that's not topic. Okay? This is not person. Let's deal with the facts on this. So that's just my personal point of view. Last thing, the public comment section that was raised, I'm not sure
whether the public should have to just stay on topic in terms of the agenda items that we discussed tonight.
Yep.
Whether we should hold that over, right? If we have agenda items that we've agreed to talk about, that's what we'll move forward with.
And then the last thing is we start on time and then we end early, right? That's what we're going for.
I think that we don't have enough time with 2 hours.
I was thinking.
I think that 6 to 9, or we start at 5 in the future, because we're not getting anything done. And again, I can't reiterate enough. I'm no more important or less important than anyone here, but to have to go through this 3 meetings in a row is an insult to my IQ.
I hear what you're saying.
Okay. Let's see how you're a lovely lady. We're 27 minutes into it now.
Right, and I'm just about to finish. Is there anybody who has any problems with any of these? Yes, sir.
The public comment, number 11.
Yep.
Okay. I was involved in getting these meetings open to the public and putting that precision in place to allow the people to come in and talk. I don't believe that is what we intended at all. Whatever the public wants to talk about in their 3 minutes at that microphone is their business, not yours.
Yes.
I don't think you should gag them, limit them in any fashion whatsoever. And if they choose to talk about something that's on the topic, that we have a meeting, fine. If they choose to bring up something that's important to them and their little prick, fine. They made the drive, they bought the dime. Do not stand on their head, please.
Okay. You guys agree with all that? Is that something that you're happy with?
Yeah, that's fine. Let's keep in mind, folks, that the agency didn't write these. These were all suggestions from the advisors on the September 10th meeting. That was something that was raised. The reason we're going over it really quickly is because we're deciding here how we're going to do that. So if we all decide that that's not how we want to run these, then fine. That's fine. We decide as a group, okay? We won't hold the public to the agenda item topics. That's okay.
Is that the case?
Those aren't.
Is that the case, though?
Yeah. So we all agree.
Yeah.
So to proceed,
I just want to hit on that real quick. I think I was the one that brought the public comment topic, and I think the point of that was, when I brought that up, was that to let the public comment and not us go up there and comment, because that's what it has become, is where the last 15 minutes has been the advisors going up there and putting on tape. Another 3 minutes after they've taken an hour and 45 minutes of these people having to listen to us talk, and that was the part where that came from.
Okay.
I thought that 15 minutes should be left for them. We got our time to comment. And that's what I, that was why that was put
which
on.
Which is what you said, which is the problem.
No, that's not what I said.
I disagree with that. I feel that many times with these meetings, I don't get to have a chance to say, express my opinion on a topic because we don't have time. We're bogged down in things like this, and having that 3 minutes, whether I'm speaking as an advisor or as an individual, I think that any advisor should be able to step up there and comment.
Is there a way around that? Maybe we can have a situation where we let them speak first, and then if there's time at the end, you guys can have it. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Let's get back to that, folks. We didn't intend for this to be the whole hour, and we just wanted to run through this pretty briefly. So I think we've got a decent set here that we can move forward with, and then we can go from there.
That's good. So it was Ross and then Tim. We got 5 seconds to talk on this.
I had a couple of suggestions. I didn't hear him getting the parking lot, and I didn't hear any decisions. That's the problem. I think the public goes to the trouble of coming here when it's their turn. I think that they ought to be able to make any comments related to fisheries they want to. I think that it's important that the advisors be allowed that 3 minutes on the record at the end, because hopefully we don't come in here with our mind made up. Hopefully we get something from everybody else, and then we have something to say at the end that might be a lot more informed than when we got here.
Bob took us notes. We've got that. Yep.
Yep, we got that.
We said that were us.
One of the solutions that, if I remember right, the way I understood it from Lance, was this question about leaving and showing respect to others. What do you think you might be able to do is just call the public testimony in a 3-minute period up. We can listen to them. Then what is the advisors who want to testify on the record? They go up there. You've already heard us. You want to leave? Leave. The whole purpose is for us to be able to get on the record something we want to say.
Yeah. Okay. Does that sound good?
That sounds good. Do we all agree with that? Okay. So when the public testimony comes, we'll all stay. We'll let the public go first, and if the advisors want to get something on the record, they can stay. We'll get that recorded on the record, but we won't hold everybody hostage in order to do that. That sounds good. I can live with that. We're only advisors. We're 45.
I'm sorry. You get your...
Yes, that was kind of my point here. I'm not a member of the advisory board or anything like this. And I don't know how many people are. And you got my timer going, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The point I want to make is, I think the public should be able to make their comment before you start anything here, so you can stay on your time frame. Start your meeting at 6:15. Public comments from 6 o'clock to 6:15 or 6:30, whatever. Then you can get your advisory thing going. Because I'm not a member of the advisory thing. I'm going to have to sit here till 9 o'clock to get maybe 2 minutes, and then the advisory people may leave or they may not. Come on. Let the public talk first.
Okay, we'll take that under advisement. There's not typically the way that they work, but we'll chew that around, okay? Thank you for your comment. And I'm sorry, I didn't realize this, but it's only advisors at first. and we'll put you first on the
list.
Well,
the only thing I was going to say, I think that public comment should be just as important.
Okay, guys, as I said earlier, this is an advisory group meeting. It's open to the public. You can sit back and listen. We do provide time at the end of the agenda for the public to comment, and we always do that. We will do that tonight. But there are other meetings that are just public meetings, where it's just a round table and the public can come in and speak, but this is a meeting of the Will of the Bay Salmon Advisory Group. So for the first hour and 45 minutes, we'll be talking in discussion with the advisors, and then the public will get their chance to speak. So thank you. No.
So the public can talk to the advisors anytime they want, right?
Yes, absolutely.
If you want to talk to them, that's they're representing the public, so you guys can talk to them anytime. Build a relationship and talk to them.
Okay.
I just want to throw that out.
Okay, so let's go on to our...
Okay, I think we've moved past this and done this enough for tonight. So a couple of things that I would propose that we discuss tonight. One would be the egg take discussion. We did have some discussion of that at the Fish Committee meeting last Thursday, and I think the Fish Committee asked the department to have a conference call between Fish Committee and some agency staff in order to better understand that issue. I think it's important that maybe we discuss that and I take some feedback on that, because when I have that conference call with Fish Committee, I would like to be able to provide that feedback from the advisory group to them while they discuss that. So I think that would be important. Secondary to that, there was some discussion at Fish Committee around the comprehensive review and the comprehensive review process. So I would like to also put those forward as agenda items. I understand that sometimes there are work that needs to get done, and Norm, you're absolutely right. We have topics that are handed to us that we need to deal with from the commission, or just feedback I need in order to take that forward either to a limited staff or to the commission. What I think we're talking about in terms of the agenda items for the weeds are that may not take up the whole agenda of the meeting. I may only need an hour to discuss that, and there's been other topics that have been raised, so we'd like to provide a vehicle where if there is time available that we can address some of those other topics that have been parked in the weeds moving forward. So that's my two cents. I would propose that we speak for we do 20 minutes of discussion on the hatchery item and maybe 10 minutes or 15 minutes of discussion on the comprehensive review process. I'll want to take feedback on both of those when we're done. So that's what I would propose to the group.
Let's do it. Let's do something tonight.
Is everyone good with that? Okay, Lyle, will you put that up on the chart that we'll do 20 minutes of discussion on the hatchery portion? Does that sound good to everyone? We could do 20 minutes and that'll work before we get to a feedback?
Yep.
Okay, is that good with everyone? Okay, and then comprehensive review process, I probably only need about 5 minutes to speak to that. It's not a real long agenda item from my point of view. Does anybody have any, would they like to see it longer? You know, we can put 20 minutes, whatever.
See what you have to say first.
Okay.
I have a question. I think 20 minutes is a good start. I think in 20 minutes it'll be time for a 5-minute break. Are we going to take one or not?
I think it's a great idea.
I as well.
Yeah, if everybody agrees, 5-minute break, I think it's
sure.
Really good idea.
That's perfect. Thank you, Ross. Good suggestion.
So let's lead into it.
Okay. The issue was raised at Fish Committee last Thursday around egg take. We talked earlier about how we have a 5 million production goal out of Nacelle for the South for this year. Don't think we're going to hit that. 3.3 million out of NEMA, we're not going to hit that either. We do have quite a few eggs over and above the production goal of 400,000 at Forks Creek.
What,
so
what
I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Barb so she can get us all up to speed on exactly what we have and what we're looking at, and then we can have a discussion about that. Thank you. In on our distribution list and advisors. This was also provided in the weekly update for this week.
Oh, I haven't sent that out.
One other agenda item real quickly that I would like to propose to the group if we have time is a little bit of discussion around the weekly mailer and what people are seeing in that, if it has the right information, wrong information, is there other things we'd like to include in that? So if we have time, I would like to have a few minutes discussion about that, if that works for the group. Just raise your hand if that's okay.
Yeah.
Does that work for everybody if we have time? Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so this spreadsheet is part of the weekly update that I've been sending out over the last 10 weeks, I don't know. Just in the last couple of weeks, we've had some hatchery stuff. So this is just a quick update on what our current program release goal is by facility, as well as the number of females it's going to take to get there. Based on this fecundity, which is the number of eggs per female, we're using a 3,000 right now. That's a little low, but we've also seen that our fecundities on our Chinook have gone down. So we're siding on the side of conservation in the sense of making sure that we get enough females. If we have too many eggs, then I guess we'll deal with those. But so currently, as you look at NACEL, we have spawned already 687 females. Technically, to make 5 million, which is where our program sits right now, is we still need another 980. We have a little over 2 million eggs, but we only have 14 females, or 14 fish. I don't even know if they're females at this point. So that doesn't mean that more fish will not recruit into the pond and to the facility, but right now that's what we have in the pond as of Tuesday, this past Tuesday. So NEMA, our program goal is 3.3 million. We need 1,100 females to get there. We currently have spawned 383, which gives us a little over 1 million, so 1.1 million. We still need 717 females, and we have 34. Hold on, let me get through this.
Fish or females?
Fish. That on-hand number is a combined male-female, because they haven't gone through them, so they don't know which are which yet. This is just in the pond. Forks Creek, we need a 400,000 release program goal. We need 133 fish to get there, females. We've already spawned 708. So we are sitting at 2.1 million, so we are well over our 400,000. So technically, we don't need any more females there, but we do have another 173 that are in the pond as of yesterday. We spawned yesterday, and so they did not spawn today. They went back today. They didn't spawn. They just dealt with coho today. So they're going to be spawning again on Monday.
My question is, that's 173 today?
That's as of today, yeah.
That's not what came in today. That's what's in the pond.
That's what's in the pond. Now, whether or not any have come in since I checked this number a couple hours ago,
We have fish still recruiting daily. Definitely at Forks and NACEL. NEMA's pretty much petered out. We're not getting much recruitment there anymore. But we are still getting decent numbers. I think when I looked at fish books, there was over a couple hundred fish that have recruited in NACEL during the week. So
yep.
We're still getting decent fish, and we will continue to get numbers of Chinook at Forks and NACEL Hatchery into November. So,
Lisa, you had your hand up. Did you have
quick question, a request. In the future, can you give us the pre-spawning mortality? Can you adjust this and send that to me and tell me how many fish we've lost at each hatchery?
Comes out
in terms of how many have died in the facility?
Yeah, along with this one, yeah.
It's also in the SCADA report.
Yeah, we can provide that. That's in fish books.
Okay.
And I can speak a little bit to it tonight. Last time I checked fish books 2 days ago, it was about 180 females. Somewhere right between 150 and 175 females that we've lost pre-spawn mortality at NACEL. It's about 600 at NEMA. And I don't know the Forks Creek number off the top of my head. It hasn't been much. Yeah.
Okay, and then there was some questions at the commission meeting from Commissioner Carpenter. He asked Ron Warren about the extra eggs at Forks Creek and what our intent was with those, because there has been some open discussion on the floor about trying to increase the Chinook eggs at Forks Creek for the north and for a better recreational opportunity up there, because with the reduction in Chinook and that hatchery, that fishery has fallen off to nothing. And there was a somewhat ambiguous answer that was not really an answer from Mr. Warren. So can you tell me what our plans are for the extra eggs? Are we going to keep them in Forks Creek? Do we have a decision vote with that in the days to come? What is our plan with those eggs?
So, one, we never have a decision vote in this body. This body does not make any decisions. What it does do is provide input to the department that I will take to the commission and to Olympia for that decision to be made. Thank you for teeing this up, Marlisa. That was exactly where I wanted to go at Fish Committee. So historically, we have simply eggs that have been in excess at Forks Creek have been identified in future brood document, which is our guiding document as to how hatchery production will be run each year. Eggs have been utilized from Forks Creek in order to backfill primarily NEMA hatchery. A lot of times we get what we need out of nacelle. There's been a few years where that's been problematic with pre-spawn mortality, but we've made some real great adjustments there, and we're doing much better. Keep in mind that we're trying to make 5 million fish off a release of 800,000. And that was always going to be not going to happen. My thoughts are, if we were going to get, we just wanted to get to 2.5, and anything above that is frosting. Next year, we'll have the four-year-old return off of 2.5 million at nacelle. This getting to 5 million will be much more realistic for the next brood year. So, with that being said, there was some discussion at the commission level. There was a letter sent in that the commission received from constituents, some of those advisors here at this room, about not backfilling out of Forks Creek, about releasing those eggs from Forks Creek facility, increasing the production at Forks Creek in order to fuel recreational fisheries. As we've seen, as the production at Forks Creek has gone down, so has the marine recreational experience for Chinook. So that's exactly why I put forth this agenda item. The commission, the Fish Committee, the chair of the Fish Committee, asked to have a conference call with agency staff to understand this issue better. I felt like this was important for the advisory group to weigh in on, so I could have some feedback and input to take to Fish Committee to let them know what you folks felt like, what we should do with those eggs. So traditionally, we have backfilled. We do have some flexibility here, and I think nothing is set in stone. That's why it was very ambiguous, because we're not exactly sure what the public wants. We have heard some folks would like to release those from that area, so that's what we're here tonight to discuss. That decision has yet to be made and will be made in the future, so that's why we're here.
Ross is next.
Yep. Yeah, along those lines, I'd just like to say that's a major policy decision. In other words, at some point, we're going to be going over a few points of the policy. This is one of them, and it's called the Chinook Recreational Priority. And some of us, including me, see this as a turning point as to whether there's going to be a recreational priority or not. Historically, well over half of the recreational harvest is in the bay. 7,000 and some man days of fishing in boats. You can't put 7,000 person days in these little rivers. So if we continue down the road of stripping the north end of the bay there, policy, which is very clear now that there's one recreational priority, that part would be dead, and I would like to not see that killed.
So, and folks, just touch really briefly what we're going to do during these 20 minutes. We'll just have the discussion, and then once we're done with discussion, we'll go around and I'll take each person's feedback in order. So don't feel like at this point in time you have to tell me exactly what you want done. Well, let's just discuss it first, and then we'll get to that. So thank you, Ross.
You're welcome.
Question. When you do the math on these eggs, you're making a
assumption of 3,000 eggs per hen, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so the egg take, this figure here of like 2,061,000 for nacelle, is that going to match? That's not going to match?
No, no, no. What we're doing, so...
Why are we using that instead of the egg take report?
We won't have, so we won't know exactly how many eggs were in each one until we're done. We can't, the eggs just, when you go to spawning, right, you zip the female up, eggs just go into a bucket, they're not counted individually. Right. We have to do that later. So for planning purposes, what we use is a recent year average fecundity. As we go through the season to estimate what the egg take is going to be, and then a couple of months from now, we'll have a much better number in terms of the actual eggs that we got.
Yeah, I understand the final, but you've got a different figure coming in estimates out of the hatchery, don't you?
No.
You don't, you're not getting egg take out of the hatchery?
Well, I'm not sure I understand. We don't get an individual count of each egg. They're only estimates at this point in time. We won't get an actual accurate count until later.
Okay, so the egg take we're working on the hatchery statement report is what?
Is an estimate.
It's the same as this?
No, because that's not updated as regularly as this is. It's well behind that.
Okay. One more question. What's the difference in return rate between nacelle and forcebreak?
So SARs for nacelle are a little bit lower than they are for forcebreak. Smolt to adult return rates out of Forks Creek average about 0.5%, whereas they're closer to 0.4% in the nacelle.
Oh, yeah, that takes a lot of math.
Yeah.
Is it 30%, approximately 30% less return?
No, not quite that. It's like I said, it's 0.5% at
Yeah, because
forks
I got to start doing a whole bunch of math to get there. So I always like it better when you say, you know, it's, we got 20% less return in Forks Creek than we do, or vice versa. That's a figure that we can understand and we can use. The other one we can't.
It's not even close. It's a little bit less. Nacelle is just a little bit less return rate than Forks Creek. I can't give you that number right off the top of my head. I'm not sure. So I can get back to you on that,
I can't calculate it. Let's do that with that one, and then let's move on. We've got running out of time.
I wish we had a recording of this 5 years ago. When we talk about this, where we're going to put these eggs, and I have no problem with putting the eggs in the north end of the bay and bringing them what will be the end of the sport fishery in the marine area, because we all talked about this 5 years ago. We said, this is going to happen. We said, the commercial fishery is going to be destroyed. It's been destroyed. The north end marine fishery is going to be destroyed. Now it's destroyed, and we're all going, oh my God, what are we going to do to fix this? If we can't work together in this stuff, and like I said, I have no problem putting them in Forks Creek. It's where we get the most fish back. But we change everything every time we do something. We knew we weren't going to get these fish. We knew we weren't going to make our egg take. We talked about this in spring. I brought it over and over and over. Norm and I talked about it. Where do we manage for egg take? We don't. And I'm sad to say this to you, but you're no longer a manager. You're a manager of a policy. You're not a fish manager anymore. It's pretty sad. That's what we've turned this into. He has to manage for a piece of paper. We should have never let this happen. This should have never happened. But he couldn't close the season. He couldn't manage his fishery. We've got to stop running this fishery under this policy. Because you cannot manage a fishery from his guesstimate in April. Or we're going to do this every year. He has to be able to close it on a day-to-day basis. Those fish went by. They went by our fishery. They were in an ASL. They got caught. They absolutely got hammered in that river. But he couldn't stop that from happening. They laid there and got caught for 3 or 4 weeks straight by 100 people. And they only took the females. I would love to see the rate of female to male. I bet it's probably the worst in the state of Washington in the Nacelle River. But this policy on a piece of paper, nobody runs a business off of somebody writing a piece of paper that has nothing to do with the fishery. And that's what we're doing. It's great to put those eggs back north into the bay. We'll have this great sport fishery again. How are you going to harvest them? They'll call us policy says you can't fish commercial fishing in the north end of the bay. So are you going to change that? If we're going to work together and work this out, the policy, we all have to realize there's going to be some drastic changes in this policy. Otherwise, why even bother raising 9 million Chinooks? There's no point in it. We go back to raising about 350,000 and just call it good. So as long as we all can come to this agreement that with 9 million Chinooks coming out of there, there's a lot of things in this policy. That was never in the policy, 9 million Chinooks. But we're going to change that. But you've got to change everything else to go with it. You can't manage this fishery from a piece of paper. You're not a manager anymore.
Thank you for that.
Time for the next person.
Mara, Lisa, and Bob.
I had my hand up.
Oh, did you?
Quite a while
before me, I think.
Okay.
Before he did, and I was ignored. I find that
I didn't.
I might have been standing in the way, sorry.
You're getting too skinny.
Let our bill.
My math says you're at 61% of what's needed. And looking at the fact that you only have about 200 females at all three facilities, about 200 fish at all three facilities, my experience in working in hatcheries as a volunteer suggests that you're going to get, if you're lucky, 40% females. Okay, so, you know, we're looking at a few females to make up 39% shortfall. In terms of these eggs, these surplus eggs, personally, I think that they should be strategically placed in two facilities, not just one. A slow rebuilding the ports, but maintaining, but trying to maintain an ACL number that was promised 8 years ago. And one last item that's in the weeds, if we can transfer eggs within this system, I asked a question about the Springer program that we started last year, and we weren't going to get eggs this year because they were out of plan. We didn't have the eggs. If I'm not mistaken, there's over 1 million eggs available in Marble Mountain. Springer eggs. I took a look at the hatchery report today.
So, to address that, Norm, we have the okay to move eggs from spring Chinook eggs from the Cowlet system, not from North Puget Sound. We'd have to run that back through HSRG and all that stuff. So we don't have the availability to do that at this time. The Springer program has not gone away. We will. The plan right now is to keep doing that every year. We just don't have those eggs available this year. If they're available in the 2020 brood year, our goal is to do that. Touching on where we're at, I just want people not to, there's not a whole lot of fish left. We were never going to get to 5 million at NACEL. That wasn't going to happen off 800K. We can get as close as we can. I feel pretty confident that we're going to get to the 2.5. We still have fish to come. There are still Chinook that are going to recruit all the way through November. It happens every year. We can prove that on the fish book rack returns. They happen every year, so we've still got some fish to come. NACEL will get pretty close. The problem here is NEMA, and we will not come anywhere close to that 3.3 million. The number that we have here, the 1.15, we might get another 100,000 if we're lucky out of the NEMA system. That's it. That there won't be any more fish to come. Those fish run a little earlier than the forks and the nacelle fish. So we'll get some more at forks, we'll get some more at nacelle. NEMA's where we're at. So, and I don't want people to get so wrapped up in that 5 million number. I know that was the goal. It was always going to be a very, very tough goal to reach with returns of 800K. Even if we didn't fish a lick, we probably wouldn't have got to the 5 million. Okay. We'll never know that for sure. But that was always going to be true. We need a few thousand females to get five million eggs. Okay. So
okay, we need to move on here. So Mara.
So I have two questions. One is, did I hear you say, Chad, that the pre-spawn mortality of females at NEMA was 600?
Yeah, it's a little short of that the last time I looked.
So a lot of these females deleted. The reason they're not there is because you had them, but there was a
They can't, we can't keep them alive there.
Is
We've got a real... Well, it's a combination of a lot of things. It's water flow at NEMA. It's temperature related. It's also infrastructure related. One of the things that we've instituted at NACEL that's really cut down, and we've instituted at 4th Street, that's really cut down on the pre-spawn mortality. Pre-spawn mortality is probably the best it's ever been at NACEL, and we're treating with formalin in the adult pond. The flow through that pond, the way it's set up, allows us to get a much better treatment at Forks Creek and at NACEL. At NEMA, we've got requirements from the Clean Water Act in terms of what we can discharge. We cannot violate those moving forward. We are not able to dump enough formalin with the way the pond is set up in order to treat those fish and keep them alive because we violate the effluent discharge out of that. And it's because of how that hatchery is set up and how the water flows through it. The water flowing out of the adult pond goes right to the river. So it would require a total hatchery rebuild in order to make that work.
Okay, and one more question. Trying to understand here the shortfall. The eggs on hand converts to a program release. What level of mortality do you assume between egg and release?
10%.
10%?
Yeah.
We have Ross from Lisa Bottom Lands. Depending on if you want to take a break or not.
Oh, is it break time?
Yeah.
Oh, at the hour mark.
Okay. Let's take 5 minute break.
Yeah. Thank you.
Time out.
That was a great suggestion, Ross. I appreciate that one. I like it myself.
So does my eye.
Yeah, no, not a problem. Not a problem.
Okay, I'll bring it up. Okay, stay on there. Okay, I'm putting you back on speaker.
Okay.
Yes.
Hold on, folks, just 1 second. I think we have a question from one of our advisors who's on the phone. I believe Francis and Andy are both on the phone.
No, Andy's the only one on the phone.
So Andy has his suggestion of egg tape.
What's that?
He has his suggestion about what he wants to do with the egg tape.
Okay, okay. So when we get to that point, okay. Is there still discussion around egg tape that you want to have?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, great. People. Ross,
I'm just asking.
Ross is
just asking.
A couple of quickies. One, the discussion has degraded to the point where it always does in the last 2 years, and that is how much farther to whittle down the recreational poverty on Chinook. Two, the reason we're doing this kind of hurriedly after the fact is because a major change, namely the sheet we got last time about here's our goals for the hatcheries for egg tape, it was made without our knowledge or input. And so it's always going to be a little hectic when we're coming after the fact. We thought we were advisors ahead of time. I think that the policy makes it pretty clear that reduction, I thought in-season management was supposed to happen. I think we needed it. I think the policy is pretty clear that when it happens, it's supposed to be divided equally between saltwater and freshwater. Thank you.
So the 5 million, the additional 2.5 million out of NACEL was part of the governor's directive to produce additional Chinook for southern resident killer whale prey availability. And then that was sent through the legislature, which sent it to us. That wasn't something for the advisory group to weigh in on. That was an edict out of the governor's office and then backed up through the legislature of Washington State. That was not something that the agency just decided, hey, let's just raise 2.5 million. Those were direct funds worked through, the governor's office and then through the legislature.
I understand that, yeah. But I don't believe the governor said where to put it.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
Marlisa, Bob, and Lance.
All right. I would like to talk about solutions and not just keep slamming, what went wrong. So I think we can all agree that 2019 is a disaster for Chinook egg take. And I would hope that as department members who are responsible for managing our resource, that we could also agree that appropriate in-season management was not utilized. And we have to look beyond just the Bay. We have to start working together with other divisions with the Department of Fish and Wildlife to know that we have enough fish coming back to our resource so that we can meet our goals. And that clearly isn't happening. We cannot live in a fishbowl and not get food and hope to have a successful outcome. So I'm saying that we knew prior to September 4th that we were not getting the number of Chinook that we should. We had Alaska and Canada to look at. Alaska shut down their commercial fisheries out there and to allow enough to get into freshwater so that they could have a successful return. Yet Washington and this department, specifically this region, we seem to feel that we're different and that we don't have to make those same kind of changes. I would task all of you in the department, Chad, your new manager, Alvar, that we look bigger and we need to be making some restrictions out there. And I hate to say it, and I'm not picking on them on purpose, but there wasn't enough fish to allow a commercial season on Chinook, and certainly not enough to allow them to dip in before September 15th and 16th. There shouldn't have been any exploitation commercially on those Chinook. We still wouldn't have made egg take, even if they didn't. But we're talking about hatchery egg take, I mean, we've been arguing previously about wild fish escapement, about making that or not. Now we're talking about our hatchery broodstick. For God's sake, where is our in-season management team? Where are you advocating for our future? You are like kids in a candy shop, allowing it to all get eaten so there's nothing to sell tomorrow. Thank you.
Well, I think that we're kind of putting, there's a number of issues here, but with a policy that's in force, being adhered to at this point in time, whatever you talked to said, it's a failure, period. It has not gotten, and what it come down to was fourth priority, period. What it did, it totally wiped out the commercial fishery. But on the same token, if you look at what happened, then you've got all these problems in river with the snag. You heard it referred to a little earlier. We've got all those females that went out there. People, that's all I want was the eggs. Well, and I agree. Hell, they should have shut the rivers off totally. Period. Anytime those fish hit fresh water, as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't eat one. Period. On a Chinook. And I've been eating fish for over 70 years, for Christ's sakes. But as far as that goes, we need to get the policy back to where it's going to benefit all of them, not just the recs or not just the commercials. We got to put together a package and be agreed upon. But we got to stop snagging and that, whatever, however they're doing it. Okay? And I'm not going to try to put a finger on one certain thing, because there was a number of different things that happened. And it wasn't just one river. It wasn't just the Nacelle or the Nema. It was a Woolapaw River. And the same thing even happened in North River. But you've only got so many enforcement officers. And unless these guys are allowed to do their job and go in and check people that are violating the law and handcuff them up, I got news for you. It's not going to change. And I'll be willing to bet you, a lot of those violators wasn't even residents, local residents. Because I know some of the local people was very upset about it. So we need to turn around and get unified and figure out what's the best way to support our hatcheries, period. And as far as the egg swapping, I think we need to turn around and utilize the Nacelle to its utmost to get that $5 million back. Now, I don't agree with what happened with Fort Strick on that hatchery curtailment and all that. I didn't want it to happen. I was one of the biggest ones to holler and scream 5 years ago and said what was going to happen to the damn recreational fishery as well as the commercial fishery when we stopped the production of Fort Strick. And Forks Creek was probably the best hatchery we have on the whole Wilbaugh system. Period. One for water, the temperature, water temperature, and that.
5 seconds.
Have I gone over my 3 minutes?
Yeah, you're right now.
Now you interrupt me.
Hold on, just one second, please.
Bob, we're going to get to the point where we're going to take everybody's feedback. At this point in time, we're just having a roundtable discussion. So we'll get where we ask you what you think we should do. We don't need to do that right this second. Right now is just a chance for us to understand the issue, not to hear what you think we should do. And that's for everyone, not just for you, Bob. We'll get to the feedback for
you. Well, I spoke this one for discussion. Spoke 4 or 5 times.
Yeah. James, did you have...
That's what we get out of
this. Okay.
Got Lance, Tim, and Ross.
On a couple of things that Marlisa was talking about, the I'm actually astounded that Fort Creek had a 400,000 release. That's what this return is. 2.1 million fish.
Yeah, they only had 350,000, but it's amazing.
NEMA had a 3.3 million release. Just over 1 million, 1.1. I think our female die-off was 680 fish. We needed 717 more. But if we go back to last year, and the year before, and the year before, we keep losing those fish. We can't keep losing them. The nacelle is an 800,000. Just over 2 million. I mean, somewhere we've got to look at this thing. I think that whoever's managing the hatchery program would get fired if this $20 million improvement in nacelle didn't help our... didn't make our fish population better, didn't make our mortalities better, didn't make our survivability, you know, that you're talking about, better. I would certainly go after somebody for $20 million, or you could give up to some of us, and we'll do something with this. But I think looking forward... I mean, we're putting that... The hatchery's in a shitter. I mean, it's... They've made that hatchery run.
Yeah. And we'll going through a full rebuild. Yep.
And they're still getting $2 million out of 800,000 relief. I don't think that's horrible. But somewhere, we have to be realistic about where we're getting these fish back. And Forks Creek is the only one that's going to save your bacon. It's the only one that's going to backfill to keep it going. You can't count on the NEMA to backfill. It hasn't done it yet. And I'm sure we can get that at our next meeting or whatever we want to do, and you can say it. This is what has happened in the last 4 or 5 years since we've done this. And I think that's the kind of stuff we need to look at to make these decisions. We don't need to say, oh, I want to fish more in the Nemo River. I want to fish more in the north end of the bay. You need to have how it has done over the last 4 or 5 years to show us what the data is, what our return is, and what we're getting back alive. To see what we should be doing with these kind of... In this situation, if we've got all the eggs in the world and we're throwing them away, go at it.
Hey, it's Francis. Just checking in. Listening in.
Uh-oh. Oh, so we hear you, Francis. Did you have something?
No, it's my fault. Checking in late. I'm going to listen in, though.
He's just checking in.
Okay, you're just checking in. Okay, can you hear us okay, Francis?
Yeah, I can hear it.
Okay, thank you.
We're talking about, what we're going to do with these eggs. And I appreciate your point. We have to get that history to be able to work out where the best. So let's keep on that. Tim?
I think I'm close. We'll let you tell me. We said we got a problem with the NEMA. We get the fish back there, and then thousands and thousands of them die down below the hatchery. Okay, the hatchery, the things that I'm looking at for mortality, if they're counting mortality inside the hatchery, is a pittance compared to what died below the hatchery. It's not a problem getting the adults back. Okay, it's the way we manage it. Now, you brought up this whole issue of using formalin. Okay, mm-hmm. And you said we got a standard that we have to follow. We have that same standard in every stream with formalin that exists.
Absolutely.
So I know that you guys treated pretty heavily with formalin in the salad, pretty heavily in formalin in the forks, correct?
Yeah.
Thank you. Now I've got a next question. Did you max out your ability on your discharge from that with formalin, or did you run out of formalin and only treated part of the way?
No, we're dumping as much formalin as we can to and right up to the level that we can discharge.
Okay.
It's about the difference there is how all those pipes are structured in those facilities. And at NEMA, everything comes from the top, flows through the raceways. I'm not sure how it works within the hatchery, but I know the last thing to get, the last place that all that water goes from the raceways and from the incubation is into, and please help me if I say something wrong here, is into the adult pond, and then the adult pond effluent goes straight to the river. There is no settling, there is nothing outside of that like there is at Nacelle or at Forks Creek. So that's the problem. That facility would have to be completely repiped and configured differently in order for us to alleviate the formalin issue. The formalin issue, though, isn't the only part of the problem. It's also about the structure of the adult pond and how that water flows through the adult pond and dead zones within it, and then sun exposure. And so there's a few different pieces of clay outside of just that. But for what you asked, yes, we are maxing out the formalin treatment as high as we can go to not violate that effluent standard.
So my point is this, if we're going to grow fish for orcas, an orca can't tell the damn bit of difference between a NEMA nacelle and a Forks Creek fish. I'll guarantee you.
I will agree with that.
So we're getting the fish out of the NEMA. We're getting them back for everybody on the coast, including we're getting them back into fresh water for freshwater fishing. Problem is, at the hatchery. Okay? So, yeah. My whole point is, with the exception of 8K, having that struggle, there's nothing wrong with cranking out fish in the NEMA.
You're correct. We can, once we have the eggs, we can raise them and release them.
So we want to drain them. So
we're going to move on. Sorry, Tim, to be fair, great. Rob, as a hatchery, do you want to come up here and talk from the back?
No.
I just want to mention that, you know, we're in this pattern of low water conditions. You know, NEMA used to get a ton of fish back, healthy fish. Nacelle used to get a ton of fish back, but we're in this pattern of really low flows August, September. So this used to work. So we have to be really light on our feet as advisors and public and fish and wildlife staff. We have to kind of light on our feet to adjust to these weather patterns. We're going to get some crappy returns at NEMA because of our flows. And we're not getting a lot of flow coming down the river to support a healthy rearing at NEMA also. Or Forest Creek too, for all that matter, has been pretty low. We've been getting warm water for rearing and a lot of disease issues. So we have to kind of light on our feet and be adaptable to where we're going to raise these fish and expect that these fish aren't going to return at the rate that we hope they would.
That's a great point. Thank you for raising that. Yeah, that also is something that's come into play the last few years.
I'd like to put a little on-site observation into this equation. Okay. When they were supposed to be putting formalin in the holding pond of NEMA, I went there 6 times. There was formula going in 2 days out of 6. Okay? So that's not a very good effort.
Excuse me, Ross. I think we're trying to keep on to we're discussing.
That has to do with the egg tip.
It does. Where are we going to put it? It's on topic. Okay, just checking.
They're dying in there. They're not being treated properly. Number two is we have the shallow pond below the weir, and we have a trap. And every fish that goes up there is trapped together in a pneumonia hole, and they give each other it. And it's obvious. Number three, everyone that gets in the hatchery goes in half of the holding pond, jammed together again. Okay, guaranteed contagion. It's not a good practice. Okay. That's why we're losing eggs there. I have a word on enforcement. Every time we hear about how somebody's keeping fish for eggs, and I talked to Bob, and I'm going to give him the information. I'm not going to turn it into enforcement. But I made three stops at the South Bend boat ramp this year while the netting was going on. Every time there was a boat violating the rules. Netting bank to bank, and one time set netting. And I'd like to see that fixed. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I'll give you the information.
Okay. Francis, did you have something you wanted to say?
Actually, I'm just going to say, if you hear voices from one side of the room, it seems like, and then voices from the other, or just one
Well, you're actually just on a cell phone. We don't have the ability to have a mic or anything like that at ELF, so we're doing the best we can with what we've got to deal with. I'm sorry about that.
We can
that.
Move the phone to each person who speaks.
Sure, we could do that. Yeah. Okay. I think what we're going to try and do is just hand the phone around like a conch, and hopefully that will help alleviate the situation. So who is next?
Marlisa.
Hi, Francis. Okay, so in an effort to provide information about egg take, since we're discussing egg take and the Nema hatchery in particular, Chad, what is the return rate for the Nema hatchery in comparison to Forks Creek and the nacelle? You said 0.4, 0.5, and
yeah,
the nacelle's a bit higher than all of them.
Yeah, and so the problem with this is
what's
how
the
we... I'm getting to that. The problem with how we do SARs is by coded wire tags. We haven't had a coded wire tag group come out of the Nema hatchery since the 2006 brood. Now, in terms of returns, we changed those coded wire tag programs so we have representative coded wire tags out of each facility beginning in the 2016 brood year. So next year, we will start to get up-to-date information. So the information that I do have from those old tags, and it was only done in 2005 and 2006, would suggest that it's lower than nacelle, about in the 0.3, 0.35 range. Keep in mind, that data is over a decade old. We will get new data moving forward, beginning with the 2020 returned, but it will still take a couple of years, given the age structure of Chinook, to get it all. So,
question.
That's an important distinction when we talk about SAR.
Something that I think is really important to know about the hatcheries, and I couldn't agree with Lance more, is we need to fix what's wrong with this pre-spawning mortality. And sometimes we know what's wrong, but we're just not able to do anything about it because we don't have funding to fix it. So lucky for the nacelle, they've got some funding coming there. They should be able to fix their facility. At the Nema hatchery, and I want this to be on the record, that 3 years ago, we blew out our little weir, the only weir in the system that was fish-proof, that allowed us to have a completely segregated Chinook run. None of the other hatcheries have been able to do that. So once that blew out, it wasn't fixed in time due to lack of funding, due to poor scheduling, due to A and B, and so then we requested some dredging. I personally requested the dredging because now we have a situation where you have sometimes up to 3,000 to 5,000 fish coming in mid to end of September, and they're trying to survive in 2 to 3 inches of water in a gravel bar. Last time I checked, they don't breathe well on the gravel bar. So this is a big problem. This is something that is easily fixed with an HPA permit. There's not enough depth of water there to provide a healthy environment for the number of fish that we see returning there. And prior to the last 2 years, we've had enough fish in the river to meet our escapement goals, but because the intake into the large pond was always designed for coho and not for Chinook, which do not jump, we have to have enough water coming down the stream in order for them to get in there. So a minor change to the external portion of that facility would allow those fish to get into the pond more easily. So those are monetary changes that are not a lot in the river that would help with losing millions of dollars worth of fish. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Who's next? Lyle?
That's it.
Okay.
Do you guys, are we good with the discussion portion? Do we want to go to the feedback portion? Francis, do you have anything you want to add before we go to feedback? Or any questions or anything you need? Okay. I'll just, since you haven't talked a whole lot, I'll just start with you. So are you're familiar with the question in front of us? What should we do with the eggs that we have on hand? So that's exactly the question. We do have the ability to backfill from forks, but we don't have to. That's the question that I'm trying to get some input from the advisory group on, in order to inform the commission and Olympia as to what we as the advisory group think should happen with those eggs. So if you had your way, given what we have, what do you think we should do? Yep. Yep. And backfill. So traditionally, we have backfilled at NEMA. Would you say then that you would like some of those eggs to go to Nacelle to get closer to the 5 million? Do you want to just backfill to get to the NEMA release? What do you mean by that? Okay, so if I could summarize, you think that those eggs should be moved to both Nacelle and NEMA Hatchery to backfill those facilities? Okay. Thank you. Okay, thank you. And I'm just holding this close to Barb because she's the one taking the notes, so she needs to hear mostly. But Francis's comment was to backfill to both NEMA and Nacelle Hatchery out of Forks Creek. Andy, are you on? Andy, are you still there? Okay.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yep, no, we heard you. We got that captured. Thank you, Francis. Okay, Andy, what would be your feedback?
I would do some major changes in the policy and try to bring Fort Creek back online. I would backfill to Fort Creek and make sales. I would take the eggs from the NEPA, put them up for the Fort Creek and make sales. I would get rid of the NEPA because it's a no problem. It's not paying for the bus. Bring Fort Creek back online, that increases opportunity in the bay, in the river, for both commercial and recreational fishing. It makes more sense for the entirety of everybody. And you bring the NEMA back on to more chunk of it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Capture that, Mark. Okay.
Well, Bob? I didn't hear what you said.
Okay, I'll summarize it for everybody. Yeah, what Andy said is he would take the eggs that are currently at the NEMA facility, move some of those to Forks Creek, move some of those to Nacelle, not release any Chinook out of the NEMA facility this year. That's what he said.
Okay, can I ask you a question on this?
Yeah, quickly, please.
According to the policy, can we...
We're not considering the policy. This is what we would do without policy language.
Okay.
That's the question.
I'd have to agree with Andy in that respect right there. Because if we're not getting, according to what Lance was talking about, we're not getting the biggest bang for our buck at the NEMA hatchery because of what the hatchery will come back. We need to utilize what we have to work with now completely. And if we can do that with putting Forks Creek back online and an ASL back to the 5 million or close to we can get, that's what we should do.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Lance?
I agree. I don't need to go any farther.
Okay.
Get the most bang for your buck. Figure out where you're getting the best return and getting eggs that you use for the next year. We can't keep getting eggs back and not getting adults back and not getting the eggs out of them.
Okay.
Somewhere we've got to stop that. So.
Okay. Thank you. Marlisa?
I would take the surplus eggs and looking at what we've got still in the tank here with 173 yet to come at Forks Creek, it looks like we might get close to 3 million out of Forks Creek if there's still fish coming and possibly some more coming to the Nacelle Hatchery. I would take the surplus eggs and split them in three. It looks like we're going to end up with about 3 million surplus eggs, perhaps all together, and I would take those and split them between Forks Creek, NEMA, and they sell.
You would split the meat.
I would split the meat. Okay. Okay.
One question. Where do we sit with Fork Creek right now?
Fork Creek, we're sitting
at. No. What do we sit as a release that we're supposed
400K.
To?
400K.
We're still at 400K.
Yeah, so you would say, I thought I should summarize this.
Change
you would
that.
Say minus the 400K from that, whatever the difference is, split evenly between the three
facilities. Split it evenly, because that will allow us to bump up Forks Creek also.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do something about that. We have limited eggs to deal with. We're trying to bump up Nacelle, and we certainly are not going to shut down the Nema Hatchery and Grow Chum. And so I think that would be a fair distribution.
Okay, thank you. Ross?
I think you need to remember the recreational priority. I think that we have some eggs at Forks Creek that can be moved, and I think half of them should go stay in Forks Creek where you can bring back the sport fishery and bay. I think half of them should go to the Nema, and I think we have to have a commitment to quit operating the Nema the way we do. It's ridiculous to trap those fish in the pneumonia hole. Just stop it.
Thank you. Kim?
To go out and kill the Nema Chinook run is about as dumb as it gets. There is no cost difference between adults coming back. There's no benefit. Might be a benefit to someone in the pole or a net, but we're putting the fish out, okay? And what I would do is I would look at these numbers and figure out if I can get, as the letter went in to the commission, $2.5 to $3 million. Then under even current policy with the stream designation from the Nema, I'd backfill the Nema. And I would get all three of those hatcheries standing on their own feet. And to go kill one to try to juice production somewhere when the same production can go out. We can get the adults out and get them back. The only question is, can you get them out of the hatchery? Okay, so that is not a cost-benefit analysis. To me, it's dumb to go in and take one of the three runs and literally destroy it, which is what that recommendation is. To take about 2.5 out of all three systems.
Okay. Thank you. Just to summarize that really quickly, because as I walked away, I thought I was a little unclear. So we don't have $2.5 to $3 million out of Forks Creek, so you would just release everything that we have out of Forks Creek, because in that scenario, we wouldn't have any extra to move anywhere. So yeah. I'm a little unclear there.
Say it this way. You have a minimum of 2.5 in Forks Creek, okay? And when you get above that level, I would move them
okay.
to backfill the Nema.
I see.
But I just don't know what the end result is.
Exactly. Okay, so if we got to that 2.5 million and had eggs in excess of that at Forks Creek, whatever that excess is, you would move to the Nema.
Absolutely. But do not okay. destroy one of the three Chinook runs.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't have to offer as much.
Norm, I do them all at Forks Creek. Since we're not talking policy, since you said you're
yep, no, not talking policy, in absence of that,
listening to everyone talk, we have a Chinook permit priority for this recreational fleet. They've been screaming at me about this year's fishery. If we have the opportunity to boost that back to where it was, every one of those eggs should stay right where they're at. Every hen that's in that pond should be spawned and left Forest Creek.
So, if I could summarize that correctly, hopefully I can summarize that correctly, would you say whatever we get at each facility, we just release from each facility and call it good?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mara. Mara, how are you?
I'm good. So, a few thoughts, but I think I actually, that's where I would like it, is what you get released. I see a lot of this as numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The space comparison, I don't have strong opinions on that. I know that there's consequences for sport commercial fishing. I don't have a particular opinion that way, one way or the other. The only thing I would say is I don't think that moving more eggs toward the Nema without having a solution to the mortality problems accomplishes very much. And so that would be my one other thought. I do think that we certainly don't want to kill that run what Tim is saying, but I also think that in the future, eggs could be moved there to rebuild once the issues have been addressed.
Okay. So for this year, just release what we have at each facility with what we have.
That's where I started.
Okay. Thank you.
So we've gone over our time.
Yeah.
But I think it's really been productive and worth it, so I don't know how you want to
So I think what we'll do is I just have we're almost to public comment time, so I just have a real quick update on policy review. I think I'll give that. There's not really much discussion to be had. So in terms of the policy review, we went to Fish Committee on Thursday. We have collected a lot of data. We've done over 16,000 angler interviews since 2015, including this year in the marine area. We've increased the number of spawning ground surveys that we have done. We have increased the onboard rate. We have a lot and lot and lot of data. Most of you are aware, the Bio4 that we had in this in Willapa Bay is no longer with us. We are actively trying to fill that position. We haven't got to the point where we're conducting interviews. It's still open at this point in time, and we're accepting candidates. Given the amount of data that we have, the amount of work that it's going to take to go through and QA, QC all that data, and then get it analyzed with the staff that we have, is going to take a while. Secondly, it's also important to understand the tie-in here between hatchery reform policy. The hatchery reform policy has been suspended. We don't know what those benchmarks are. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to shoot for broodstock management targets that haven't been developed yet. So the comprehensive review process has been postponed. We talked about maybe having a final product by the summer of 2020. We're not sure. It's really going to depend on the amount of support that we can get through the agency. I've personally got a meeting with the heads of the agency, James and myself, in a week to discuss how we may prioritize some resources to get this done. I want people to keep in mind that the Columbia River Policy Review just finished. That process took 2 years for them to complete that. They had three full-time staff working on it. They also had staff from Oregon and also in terms of the feds and in the compact working on that. So far this year, working on comp review is just me, and that's not my only job. I've got a lot of other things that I also have to do. So this process is going to take a while. We're working on what we're going to do in terms of a process moving forward in order to get guidance or not get guidance for the 2020 North of Falcon. I don't know what that looks like yet. That is yet to be determined. Hope to have that settled pretty soon. But that's where we're at in terms of a comprehensive review. So in order to get this done properly, in order to get this done right, we need to take our time and make sure we put in our due diligence. Keep in mind, same thing, when we did policy development, it was almost a year process, and there were also two dedicated policy staff and one dedicated technical staff in order to crunch all that stuff and get it done. We have not had the resources to be able to do that. In season, we're also starting to gear up for forecasting and North of Falcon, and that's a significant amount of work that our staff has already dedicated to that will fill more than their 40 hours. So as much as we would like to have all that stuff done, I think it's more important that we have a quality product that's been thoroughly vetted, that's been run through science division and technical review to really understand, to really meet the muster. So that's kind of where we're at right now with the comprehensive review process. Tim?
So thinking about like a law, the policy was amended twice, once by the pickle and then by the famous options.
Can I put a ground rule that there's no more pickle?
No.
All right, I'll own the pickle. Okay.
And you're going to continue to eat it, and I'm going to continue to repeat it.
I freaking hate pickles.
You're going to get more of it. So my question is, are you going to pickle us again, Chad? Now, where does this policy stand? As I understand it, the original policy passed in 2015, that language is there. It was modified by the pickle, and that was only good for a year. It was modified by option C, which wasn't supposed to be a modification, and that was good for a year. So as we started in North of Falcon, the original 2015 season, 14%, yeah, all of that is the document we're on right now.
Yes.
Okay. Is that, that's correct?
Yes. What we have right now, the guidance that was provided for the commission was for 2018, and then we got guidance for 2019. As we stand right now, the guidance would be what we have in the policy.
Okay.
What that looks for, what that looks like moving forward, and check-ins with the commission, we haven't identified that or worked through all those issues. We're going to be working on that over the next month or so. We will definitely have. One thing I don't want to do is not go into North of Falcon February, March without concrete guidance. No one wants to replicate what happened last year. Last year was a disaster. We had meetings and we didn't even know what we were shooting for. So it's going to be important that we get time with the commission and time with you folks set up in order to get that moving forward as quickly as possible to guide us for 2020.
Okay, my next question. Hatchery reform is referenced in Rural Bombay policy, in its, yeah, policy. So that hatchery reform was stood down for a period of time.
Yes.
And then did it get stood down again? In other words, does the hatchery reform policy apply?
A hatchery reform is still suspended pending finalization of the review.
Okay, so
now, hatchery, where that is right now is, I believe there's a, we're pretty close to a draft document that's being shared with NOAA, and HSRG, and everybody's doing their review of that. I'm not exactly sure, as I sit here today, what the timeline is when that will go in front of the commission for final policy guidance moving forward. So,
are you going to present, as the settlement says, in advance to this advisory group and the public, any proposals to change that policy prior to January?
Absolutely.
Okay, so no more of this surprise and ambushes, right? You're going to come out and present to all of us this department's position on a request to the commission for a change in the policy, if any changes are wanted.
Well, I mean, yeah, that will all happen if the commission wants to have the commission. We don't know what that looks like right now.
No,
I'm not sure if the commission hasn't told me what they want yet. So I have a difficult time answering that because I don't know what the process is going to be moving forward. But with that being said, I'm committed to transparency and sharing where we're at and what that may look like as soon as I know what it is.
Mr. McKaysey told us that's what was going to happen.
And I would, yeah.
It's time for the public.
It is time for the public.
It is time for the public. Okay, so thank you. Thank you all. Is there anybody from the public who would like to come up and say a few words? I see this gentleman here, and you as well, ma'am? And you, Commissioner Olson? Okay, go ahead. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, could you come up and speak into the microphone, please?
You might be standing. Yeah, I'm standing. Just state your name.
Okay, my name's Ezra McCampbell. I just moved up here a couple years ago, and I used to fish with gillnets with the tribal people down in Hoopa and Yurok on the Trinity and Klamath Rivers. And what I've seen up here, since I've been up here, like going to the Raymond City Council meetings, that it came out in the Raymond City Council meeting that the city has been out of wastewater compliance for the last year. There's a development over here behind Thriftway in the middle of the river that is on an 11-foot elevation island that when there's 12-foot or higher tide, that island was juvenile salmon habitat. The oyster farmers spraying the pesticide and the herbicide in the bay kills the juvenile salmon's food sources and their hiding spaces for the eelgrass, because if they don't have anything to hide in, the bigger fish are just going to eat them. And so, and then like the clear cutting clear cutting, you're going to have a lot of silt washing down into the rivers and clogging up all the spawning grounds that aren't relying on the hatcheries. So I mean, the hatcheries are basically like life support for your fishery system here, and you know, you need to keep your hatcheries going, but you also need to get the whole system working together, everybody in the system working together, because like the oyster farmers, if the plant life was still in the bay, they wouldn't have the acidification problem that they're having, because the plant life fixes carbon and lowers the acidity of the water. And you can do the oysters in the grow bags. But it's getting everybody to work together, getting the forestry to people to work with the fishery people, instead of it, and then the cities to actually enforce environmental laws and to follow the environmental laws that they're supposed to be following. Because if you put out however many fish you're putting out a year into water that is full of toxic chemicals or whatever else, it's just going to kill them. And if they don't have any place to hide or any habitat to live in and get their food, they're just going to die. You're not going to get, you know, they're not even going to make it to be adult fish.
Thank you.
Thank you for your words.
Thank you.
That was great.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Just state your name so the guy who's talking. So, my name is Harvest McCampbell. I've lived in Raymond for getting close to 6 years. And I just, if we can't close the fisheries when the fish numbers are low, we're not going to have a fishery. You know, it's just, if the numbers aren't high enough, you're not going to have a sustainable fishery. You're not going to have a sustainable fishery just for the fish themselves, not for the orcas, not for the commercial fishermen, not for the recreational fishermen, you know, not for the sea lions. Everybody hates sea lions. Sea lions are really intelligent. They've been here 3 million years. You have to, if you're not seeing the numbers come back, the fisheries have to be closed, or we're not going to continue to have a fishery. So that's one. The other thing I heard people talk about here is the problem with regulation and enforcement. And I'm just astounded here in Washington State that there's all kinds of environmental laws being broken in my own backyard, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Department of Ecology, the city, the cops, nobody enforces. Nobody is regulating. This stuff is going on in plain sight in front of all of us, and nobody's doing anything about it. So if we need to fix that. And then actually, if you read the laws, and if you read through some of the RCWs that are related to the environment, there's no clauses for enforcement. There's no, you know, it doesn't say who is going to enforce, and if they refuse, who's going to enforce instead. You know, it's like Washington State has a lot of really great laws, but nobody's doing any regulation or any enforcement. And I had one other thought. Oh, I have seen the announcements for public comment on the Willapa River and the Willapa Bay for public meetings that are in Grays Harbor County. They need to be here. They need to be here where the people live, who live in this watershed, where the people fish in this watershed, where the people walk the trails in this watershed, where the commercial fishermen are making their living in this watershed. They need to be here. Don't have them in Grays Harbor County. That's just kind of ridiculous. You know, you're expecting the public and the stakeholders and the people involved to drive over the hill, that road is a lousy road. It's no fun to drive it in bad weather. Spend gas money. Gas is expensive. Anyway, they need to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson.
Hello. Lisa Olson, Pacific County Commissioner and citizen. I've been coming to these meetings trying to educate myself. Sorry, it's just my... it's my mood today, so... That might explain my comments also. But I've been coming to these meetings trying to educate myself on the... on the process, and you know, so I can hopefully represent our county intelligibly. And I think this is probably, except for that group hug stuff at the beginning, I think this is probably the most productive meeting I've been to. And you guys were all kind of agreeing on things, and I would hope that the recommendation before the commission this year in December is to get rid of this policy, because you guys can't manage things based on parameters set on a piece of paper that you have to follow when Mother Nature has other ideas. I talked to speaking of just the Willapa policy and not considering the Columbia, I talked to our fish processor in South Bend. He's lost in upwards of $1 million since this policy went into effect, which means that's not money coming across the dock into his business, which means it's not money that these people are generating in our communities. On the flip side of that, our sales tax, which is things that we all spend, everybody that lives here plus people that come in here, sets records every year for the last 3 years. It's just going up. We're set to go over $2 million this year on sales tax, just for the revenue for the county, which is great for the county, and sales tax is something of a fair tax because it, everybody that is here spends money here. But to me, that's a bit of a indicator. You know, I see the boat launches full. I know Norm, you told me in another meeting that I come to your town and I eat in your restaurants and I agree with that. But I think that there's a way to have the resource for everyone. And the people that don't have a fish in a boat, that's the only way they get fish, is because a commercial fisherman has a business. So I think it's there for all of us if we just work together and do it correctly. Thank you.
Is there any advisors who would like... I got another member of the public who would like to speak? I'm sorry, did I miss your hand earlier?
No.
I apologize.
Something came through my brain, I thought I might say it. So, I'm Karen Carter. I've lived in the area for 6 years now. So the first 3 years I was here, my husband and I started salmon fishing. Those salmon were everywhere. You could walk knee-deep, salmon right through your legs. You could literally reach down and touch them. 3 years ago, we caught, between the two of us, 3 salmon. Last year, we caught 1. This year, we have not caught a single salmon, and usually by the end of October, I have my smoker going. So there is an obvious decline in all the salmon populations, not just the Chinook. And I also had another question, is why is the Forks is doing such a great return with the eggs, why are they so much lower on the expectations than Nacelle and Nima?
Maybe we can touch base and share some information, and we can,
yes.
That's a long conversation that we're not going to solve yes. here tonight, so...
I'm also the editor of the Willapa Harbor Herald, and I'd like to give you guys business cards before you leave, because besides just being a recreational fisherman, I need to get the information out to everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to do what everyone else did, is turn around and stand up, and I, in particular, would like to talk to the commissioner. Thank you for coming up and talking to everyone here. As a part of the advisory committee for this area, I was born here in this community. I have property in the Nima. I live out of town most of the time these days. But I would ask those of you who are here, whether you're a commercial fisherman, whether you're a hatchery management person, or whether you're a rec guy, we can't create a season for opportunity on zero fish. We can't give an opportunity to fish on nothing. And so we knew 3 years ago that our broodstock levels were going like this with wild fish. So this year and last year, before we started the season, we didn't get enough wild broodstock coming back over the bar to meet our goals. That's because pre-intercepting the ocean took too many. And now we had a situation where mid-season we knew that we were not meeting our, we suspected we were not going to even meet hatchery escapement, yet we allowed a commercial season to continue. So we allowed them to fish on a run size so that we didn't even make our hatchery escapement. How wrong was that? How wrong was that? I mean, come on, the goal is to increase for everyone. That we can agree on. We need to bring this back so that we can all have fish. And if we continue to fish on nothing, less than nothing, we will soon have less than nothing. I mean, numbers are real. You know, as far as I know, 2 + 2 still makes 4. And we can't continue without in-season management to make the appropriate adjustments. We are dealing with ocean climate change. Things are not friendly. And we need to make the changes that we need to have a successful outcome in this county. People depend on it. You know, there is commercial fisheries. They have a priority on coho and chum. And Chinook is set aside as a priority for recreational fishers. Let's make sure that we don't have nothing to fish on. Thank you.
You both put your hands up at the same time. Let's thank you, Ross.
Age before beauty.
Hey, I'm Bob Wick. I'm an advisor, but something come to mind. Back a number of years ago, 20, 25 years, Lance probably is more aware than I am, the commercial fishery gave up the whole south end of the bay from Nakata South to Bear River. I'm trying to put it nicely, but a brain fart of somebody to increase the production and everything. And also, we've also been curtailed on our chum fisheries, big time, for 11, 12 years now. That has not come back, and we have not seen any increase in the chum, on the chum escapements, I don't believe. So, what we was doing before was working, because we had a very aggressive chum fishery. And we did produce a lot of fish, and a lot of, and there was a lot of income that came in into Pacific County just with our chum fishery and the incidental cohos that was caught with it. Now, since that's happened, and I'm not sure how it, it's supposed to be a conservation measure to turn around and get the chum back. Well, it has not worked. So I think we need to go back and look at our seasons and our season structure. We fish till the 11th of October. The chum, it was always figured out. We didn't have any real big chum fisheries until after October 15th. We was cut back there. Well, that has not helped our fishery. It has helped, not helped the economy or anything. So I think we also need to have directed chum fisheries in the third and fourth weeks of October, because we've not seen any significant change of what we've done for the last dozen years. Thank you.
Ross Barker, so I'll make it short and sweet. Don't kill the only recreational priority we have. In-season manage everything as necessary to take care of the wild fish and the hatchery egg tick. Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the public that would like?
A lot of things I am... not really upset about, but a lot of things that...
What's your name?
Mark Miller got in my crawl. I've had a lot of phone conversations with Chad. You're Chad, correct?
I am.
I've never met you.
No, it's nice to finally meet you.
On the phone. I've been disgruntled about the predators that are coming up the river below my house. Never been there. I've lived there all my life. There have never been seals coming up that river. Yesterday, I witnessed 3 come up there, and I put my fig glasses on one, and One was kind of white. And I said, what kind of a seal? It must have been a harbor seal. Aren't they kind of gray? Most seals are black.
Gray response.
Well, black have come up the river. Anyway, I've never seen them in the river before up until about 3 years ago. And they're coming right in there, and they're eating fish right below my house. They've never been there before. I've seen black ducks. I taught up here at the high school. Do I have a 3-minute limit? Mm-hmm. Okay. I taught up here at the high school. I'd go to school in the morning and see this 2,000 cormorants come over the high school, going back out the ocean. Leave school in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, 2,000 cormorants going up above the high school. What do you think they're doing there all night? Eating the small. If we don't take care of the predators, and I know I'm a predator too, you know, during the season, like she said, if there's not an escapement up there at the hatchery, cut it off. That's okay. We need to keep the fish coming up the river. When I was a kid, just started steelhead fishing, I'd go up the South Fork, and you'd almost have to wear a nose plug of all the dead salmon. I steelhead fished up there last year. I saw one dead salmon up the South Fork. It's not just, I mean, the environment's taking its toll, the predators are taking its toll. I mean, they're taking its toll too. But we got to just start pumping those rivers full of fish. It's the only way you're going to get it back. And putting a quota of 250,000 fish, 350,000 fish, you got to be pushing up in the millions, because you got to fight the cormorants, you got to fight the seals, and you got to fight the good fishermen. Not me, but the good fishermen.
Sure. I need a point of reference. What river?
South Fork of the Wapaw.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, we've reached our time limit. Is there anybody else who...
I need to ask a question. The South Fork has not had planted steelhead since 2012. I don't have an answer for that, but I've seen it on the website. You say, look at the smolt count. Why have you not planted the South Fork? I mean, come on. It's a great steelhead river. You're not planted. No fish.
Okay.
I just have one quick thing. We have another. Prior to the extension of the comp review process, we had another meeting scheduled for November 21st. There was one other thing that I had on the agenda that I would have liked to talk about tonight if we had time, which was the weekly mailer. I'm not sure. As a group, I think it's important we decide. We're not going to have really any comprehensive review documents to go over at that meeting. So I'm wondering, one, if we want to have it. Two, if there's other things, if people would like to comment on the weekly mailer. I'm seeing some heads yes, we do want to have that meeting. So I will try and maybe schedule a quick conference call or something where we can work out an agenda for that meeting so we have time to prepare, if that makes sense to everyone.
What day was it?
November 21st, or whether we actually need to meet in person on that date. So let's think about that, and I'll reach back out to you folks. Tim?
On your hatchery rack reports, even in the final, only for Chinook, there's no transfers in the final. I would like, from this point on, you guys to identify on those hatchery reports Chinook transfers.
Okay.
And I want to encourage you very strongly to spend some time
to
give us the history of these transfers.
Okay, so one thing that you would like on the agenda maybe is a comprehensive review of what's happened at the hatcheries over the last few years to talk about. Okay, we can work on that. Does everybody, would that be a good topic to have for that meeting? Does that sound good to everyone? Okay, Marlisa?
I'd also like to add a topic about, disease ick and problem solving.
Okay.
In 2020, with our return, what are we going to do to combat those problems?
I'm not
I'm not the one to speak on that, nor is any of the staff here in this room. What I would suggest is maybe I reach out to Brian Quinton, who is our regional fish pathologist, and see if he might be available to come in and speak to us on disease issues in the facility.
Yes.
Okay. That's not him anymore, though. That's actually Rob. Randy Aho. Rob manages hatcheries in Hood Canal.
I'd like to know how much longer you plan on staying at this job.
No, you don't.